Duffy's Beer presents the morning show on Trib Live Radio featuring Ken Laird, Guy Junker, and Tim Benz. 294 Curry Hollow Road, 412-653-BEER. See all of our weekly specials at duffysbeer.com.
The Trib Live Radio Triple Threat.
He wants three. You know that's a triple.
Ken Laird, Guy Junker, and now Tim Benz right here on Trib Live Radio.
Those loser Bengals did it again. Well, he did it the first time. One loss in a 10-6 thriller on Monday Night Football. Does it open the AFC North back up to hope? Laird, Benz, and Junker here on the Duffy's Beer Trib Live Radio Morning
Show. If you lose
at
Arizona Sunday, it does. Then you can beat them, and then you only got one other game to make up somewhere. But
See, there's a little hope. I like that. I thought this was just going to be dismissed right off the bat.
I'll dismiss it.
Okay. Thank you.
You want to get the schedule for the Bengals the rest of the way before we get too far along here? Let's just
First of all, before you do that, what did you have the Houston game as a Bengals win?
I did, yes.
Okay. All right. Just so we know, you're making your predictions the rest of the way.
That's true. Prediction's sure to go wrong.
You're the guy in last place in pick and pork. We're going to.
Oh! Bang! I'm loving this show already.
Lay it out. Just lay out the big picture. Give the big picture before we go bite by bite here.
Okay. Bengals lose last night. They are 8-1. They have 7 games left. They have already shredded their bye week. As Guy pointed out, they're in primetime next week at Arizona, who is right now a division leading team and maybe the 2 seed.
There's a lot of people thinking they might be going to Super Bowl.
I don't know. First of all, the Steelers beat this team with backup quarterbacks, with Landry Jones. Yeah. Were you impressed with Arizona?
No.
Are they really any good? I don't know who's any good anymore in the NFL. So this is why this game is tough in playing.
The Patriots are still good. I just don't know if they'll be healthy enough to be what we think they can be.
Well, true. And you know,
isn't it sort of like them and everyone else though? Isn't you kind of get that feeling? The Patriots. I mean, aren't they on a different plane than everyone else right now?
Well, they just almost lost to the Giants. They should have lost to the Giants. And yeah, Tim's right. Injuries are
significant. Any given game, something can happen. But I mean, in the big picture, is there anybody that can stay with them over a long period of time?
I don't think they're unbeatable. I don't think this version of the Patriots is unbeatable, especially without their running back and Edelman. They do keep winning. But the Steelers have won with a lot of backup players, too. You've got to give both teams credit for that. But it's affected both teams. I mean, eventually, depth will, you know, catch up to you here a little bit.
Do the Bengals schedule with Tim, though.
Okay. At Arizona next week. Do the Bengals bounce back from this performance last night, which was... Both defenses played well.
Tell you what, I'll play along and give you a no. Okay, they lose to Arizona.
That's the only hope for this scenario. You've got to give them a no for Arizona to drop to 8-2. Then they host the Rams, who have just benched Foles as Foles and have now dipped into the backup conference.
They will not lose to the Rams.
They could lose to the Rams.
They will not lose to the Rams.
They have a defense capable of shutting down Andy Dalton.
What's your hunch?
I agree with you. Keep going. That's 1-1. That's fair.
I think you need them to lose that game too, and be 8-3.
Well, we know what they need. You asked if it's
yes.
possible.
This is the only way it's possible. Is what I'm telling you, because they have some clear gaps in their schedule.
They won't lose 3 in a row.
The Packers did, right? Falcons lose 3 in a row.
The Steelers beat the Rams in St. Louis when Roethlisberger went down mid-game.
That's true.
With Michael Vick at quarterback, who was so bad that they didn't even want him suiting up and playing last week.
I know.
Stop trying to
Which
talk yourself into the Rams.
Which a game that looked a lot like last night's.
You're trying too hard already here
to
make
Case. Well, Case Keenum may provide an offensive spark. That's what Jeff Fisher
Get past
is suggesting.
1-1. Let's say they're 1-1. The Steelers are still 2 out at that point.
At Cleveland.
No.
For the rematch of the Battle of Ohio.
So they've already won 2 more games. They're already up to 10 wins.
Yeah, that's 10 wins. Then the Steelers game, which, of course...
I'll play along. The Steelers beat them.
Steelers go in there and beat
Fine.
Them.
Fine.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, now they're a 3-loss team. At the 49ers.
Win.
Maybe Tom Sula farts really loud. I don't know. Maybe he disrupts them in the pregame.
Now they're up to 11 wins.
Okay. At Denver.
All right, I'll spin this one on you.
4th loss?
At Denver? It's at Denver.
Yes.
You said, okay. So what are we doing? What are we doing with the Steelers against Denver? Go ahead and
Great
make
question.
Your case that the Bengals
well,
are going to
here.
Lose to Denver.
Denver's
and,
here.
So that's going to make all the difference?
That's the big difference.
The big difference is home and away, and that's
At
it?
At Heinz Field advantage.
Because I see what your wheel's turning here. You're going to make every case as to why the Bengals are going to lose to the Broncos, but the Steelers will beat the Broncos.
That's correct.
Never know. Osweiler could be something.
Well, maybe Peyton Manning.
Brock Osweiler coming to Heinz Field.
That's the week after the Steelers play the Broncos, I believe. So maybe Peyton doesn't come back until that week.
Ah,
and
I
he's
see.
Cleared of this plantar fasciitis.
And
we just got him.
Dipped his toe into the fountain of youth here.
Yes.
Let's say they lose that. They're still at 11 wins, right?
Yeah, it's 11. Yep.
Okay.
And then the home finale against the Baltimore Ravens. Bengals and the Ravens.
That's good. You got to put that
17.
As a win.
So
that would be 12
that's 12
wins.
And 4.
Generously.
And the Steelers would have to run the table
Steelers
to tie.
Steelers would have to run out. Yeah, it ain't
run
happening.
The table to tie and then win a tiebreaker.
And then
tiebreaker.
We don't even know what the tiebreaker would be at that point.
Because they would have split head-to-head.
It would say FC, and I got a
feeling. So you tell me if it's up for grabs based on that. Any 50-50 scenario, even 50-50 scenarios that weren't 50-50, they were 40-60 against. We gave
them
to Cincinnati there.
You gave them no chance of St. Louis. You gave them
no chance.
I think
there's a ray of light coming through a hole in the screen that was not there yesterday.
Exactly.
Oh, that is a very small screen and a very small hole.
Well, how do you...
A bat can get through a hole that small, though, and cause lots of havoc.
How do you justify Cincy losing this game yesterday at home? Off their... long week to prepare. They played on the Thursday prior coming in here.
I don't know.
Is Houston better than we thought? Is it just the one game in a 16-game schedule? Could be. Are they still, let me ask you this, who are the two best teams in the AFC?
Cincinnati and New England.
You're confident of that? Still confident? I mean, I'm not saying I disagree with you, just to play devil's advocate here. Do you think the Steelers
I think a couple weeks ago I might have had Denver in that mix and not sure, but not anymore. I think that's true.
Cincinnati's
very well balanced. I think you have to. There are teams in all sports that have other teams' numbers. Houston has been a thorn in Cincinnati's side for a while. They've beaten them twice in the playoffs, and Yates has been a quarterback that's been a pain to them. I think it's just one of those. You know, that was another game in which the quarterback getting hurt almost was a positive.
Oh, but Yates was signed like a week ago when Mallett overslept.
But I know. But, I mean, he's beaten them before. He got him the only touchdown of the game that they needed.
That's true. He came out firing and one great catch. Their Texans' defense was really good.
Yeah.
That corner who the Steelers almost drafted or thought about, Johnson from Wake Forest.
Oh, he made a great diving knockdown.
Even
late.
Good teams lose to lesser teams during the course of a season. We just spent yesterday celebrating the anniversary of the Steelers coming back to get reunited from the 2005 team.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about that from the event on Sunday for the better part of the last half of the show, right?
Yeah.
So look back at their schedule. They lost to Jacksonville. They lost to a non-playoff Ravens team. You know, good teams will lose along the way surprising games. You know, the Patriots won a division in a year where they lost to a bad Arizona team that didn't make the playoffs. You know, there are losses like this along the way that happen to every club.
Look, I'm the one who told you after week one I think the Bengals are really good.
Yeah, I know, and that's part of where my angst is coming from. Is you spent the entire first quarter,
well, we gotta
first
fill some
six
time
games
here.
Of the year trying to tell me how
the
Bengals
Temple
are
can beat them, though.
Yeah, now you're trying to undercut them. I don't know, St. Louis, Aaron Donald.
Yeah, I still think the last night's loss doesn't change my opinion of them in the big picture. It gives me a little more hope that the Steelers could make it interesting down the stretch. But it all hinges on this Sunday.
I mean, I'm not even sure it matters that much. If the Steelers are the 5 seed and they get to go on the road and play a bad division winner of the South, maybe it's Houston at this point.
Well, you might have to travel to Foxborough a week earlier. That's where it would matter.
Yeah, I guess. If you feel like since he, well, the
and you
the
look
North
at the years
buy.
That they've gone on to the Super Bowl, someone else has taken care of the Patriots for them.
Right.
If the only way you have you can meet the Patriots is in the AFC Championship game, you have a greater chance of someone taking care of them for you this year, too.
If you really want to buy into this dream scenario, though, the Bengals are 3-0 in the division right now. That is the second. That's the first tiebreaker if you're tied within the division. So they'd have to lose out all their division games, which includes that Cleveland game.
And Baltimore.
What's the tiebreaker?
Head-to-head.
Head-to-head, then division.
Oh, it's not conference. Oh, okay.
In the division tiebreaker, it's division record.
Right, exactly.
And the Steelers are 1-2 in the division. The Bengals are currently 3-0, so that's not real good. And the Bengals are 7-1 in the conference. So if it goes past that, you're in trouble.
Yeah, I think last night might even have been Houston, as I said, has beaten them twice in the playoffs and kind of has their number, but I think last night might have been a little of that. It's hard to keep your edge week in and week out when you're as comfortable as they are.
Yeah.
I mean, what Denver's lost 2 in a row now, and they're only 2-2 in their last 4, and they still got a 3-game lead. I mean, it's hard to, you know, what are you playing for right now?
After the game, J.J. Watt was interviewed, and he took a little dig at the Red Rifle Said he looked like a Red Ryder BB gun.
We wanted to turn him into the Red Ryder BB gun.
Oh, yeah. Our goal was to come in here and make the Red Rifle look like a Red Ryder BB gun. Was that your favorite Christmas movie growing up, guy?
No, I'm a sucker for It's a Wonderful Life.
Okay, me too. That's right. We're on the same page
there. I prefer Bad Santa.
Dalton took very much exception to
I'm not surprised.
Andy Dalton.
The Nightmare Before
Bad
Christmas.
Bad Santa was really funny.
I've never seen Bad Santa.
Oh my God! You've never seen Bad Santa.
Sorry.
With the little.
I still haven't seen
elf.
The Mighty Ducks. I haven't seen Bad Santa. Put it down on my list.
Yeah, that's your homework assignment. My homework assignment will be to concoct a way where the Steelers can catch the Bengals. Your homework assignment is to watch Bad Santa.
Okay. The Bengals quarterback in question here after the game and after those comments from J.J. Watt to Lisa Salters. Quote: I am disappointed in him for the integrity of this game. I have a lot of respect for J.J. Watt. He's a really good player, and so there's a lot of kids and a lot of people that look up to him. For him to make comments like that, it just shows that it's acceptable to do that kind of stuff and say it, so it's disappointing for one of our best players in the league to come out and say something like that.
What is he?
He's rooting it for the kids. How dare he call me the Red Rifle, Red Ryder BB gun?
Is this ginger shaming? Is that what this is?
I don't know what this is.
Well, I like J.J. Watt a lot, and I like his when he started off by saying everybody said we couldn't come in here a 3-5 team and beat an undefeated team. And what did he say? Hello, or where are you now? I can live with that. You know, it's the old everybody said we couldn't do it, but that does make it a little
personal.
Nobody
gave us a chance.
You're making fun of his hair color. What if he made fun? If he was a black guy, what if he made fun of him being a black guy?
Well,
would you be allowed
nickname.
To do that?
The Red Rifles is nickname.
What if his nickname was Chocolate Thunder?
Penn State's own Michael Robinson adds, he made a joke, don't be a BB gun, end quote. I kind of like that.
See, I disagree. You're making fun of a physical
attribute. Think he was out of line here?
Yeah, I don't like it. What if the guy wore glasses and you called him Four Eye? I mean, to me, it's...
I guess if you put yourself in a steel, like let's say somebody said, we tried to make Big Ben Little Ben or something like that, would that be a similar statement?
Making fun of his height?
Yeah, you're making fun of
not
his
little
height. How dare you make fun of his physical characteristics?
Baby Ben. Yeah. We made Big Ben a stopwatch.
Would the Steelers take offense to that? Would Ben get all hot and bothered by something like that?
Look, I mean, I don't
call us names.
I don't think it's an earth-shattering I didn't care for the comment, but I don't think it's a big deal.
Yeah, I thought it was a little chintzy when he said it, but when Andy Dalton went integrity of the game.
Yeah,
his response
is almost worse
for
than,
the children.
Well, yeah, that's too.
When
much.
You play the for the children card,
there's a lot of kids that look up to him.
There was a lot of
most
over
of them
the
aren't
top,
awake at 12 o'clock at night though.
A lot of over the top reaction in that game yesterday, not only post game but pre game. I mean, I'm sure all of France feels better now that Vontaze Burfict is on their side. Like when you've got your national flag being carried out by Vontaze Burfict, you know you've got some support.
Yeah, two guys had flags, French flags, didn't they, coming out?
I just noticed that Vontaze had one of them. Like, do I want that guy on my side?
I think that means a lot to the people of France, Tim.
So long as Vontaze Burfict is with us, we're gonna manage to get through this okay. I'm all for people showing support and trying to feel connected to the situation. It does ring a little bit strange when the guy in the orange construction hat with the Bengal face paint is holding the peace sign with the Eiffel Tower. Like, do you think he really feels connected to the message, or is this, if I bring this sign, I might get on Monday Night Football?
Do you think if you showed Vontaze Burfict a map of Europe, he could point France out?
That's what I was thinking. He should be on one of those late-night skits.
I guarantee he can't.
Where Kimmel asks, like, obvious geographic questions and the guy can't come up with the answers.
Vontaze Burfict probably thinks the Eiffel Tower is a Verizon hotspot. Give me
D'Angelo
a break.
Williams thinks he's it's a winger for the Vancouver Canucks.
Well, words, maybe they mean something. Maybe this will be a signature loss for the Cincinnati Bengals that rallies the team together around the Red Rifle, the Red Ryder BB gun. Just as the Penguins, guys, yesterday, a lot of talk over at Consol, a lot of words coming out after Geno's words after the loss in Jersey.
Hey, by the way, just before we get off the France thing, you know, in the future, we have to recognize ISIS as Dash. You know that, right? Did you get the memo yesterday?
ISIS as Dash?
Dash. Yeah, you're supposed to call it Dash because that pisses them off.
Oh.
Did you know that?
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I mean, I saw this on 60 Minutes about 10 days ago, a week ago, whatever, before the attacks on France, and they had to kind of interrupt this person. They were doing a literal translation from this group of Christians that was kind of pushed out of their village because they hate Christians. So they kept calling him Dash. Dash, if you did the acronym, it's like calling them MFers or something like that. So Obama now has taken to calling ISIS Dash.
This is very confusing.
It's the same thing.
I thought it was a salt substitute.
Remember that?
Yeah.
My God. God, I hadn't thought of that, and I can't tell you how long. Mrs. Dash, right? So call him Dash. That pisses him off.
Okay, noted. I'm sure Vontaze will get that memo, too, for the next time he's carrying the French flag.
Just looked at it, and I thought, this is the guy that was celebrating Le'Veon Bell's knee exploding, and now he's making a patriotic gesture.
Vontaze effing perfect. Come on. Now, the Penguins yesterday, a lot of chatter over at the arena. They will get back in action tonight at Consol. And the Malkin quotes from last week still were ringing out as pretty strong ones, although we had Rossi on the show yesterday, and I think he adequately said, I didn't hear these myself. I want to kind of pump the brakes. Maybe they were taken out of context, or Gino didn't mean what he said, meaning that we're all mad at each other. I think that was the main takeaway from that. Big story in the trip today from Jason Mackey. Penguins not pleased with recent play. Reject any idea of rift on team.
I also refer to the Penguins' power play as Dash.
You do? Is that insulting to them?
Yeah, should be.
Okay. Clarifying those comments, on Monday, Malkin said his mad at each other comment was supposed to mean that the Penguins were frustrated with their performance during the 4-0 loss, which was, as they all agreed, their worst collective performance of the season, and the miscommunication was because of the language barrier. Malkin, quote, "It's not what I wanted to say. We're a pretty tight team. We support each other. In New Jersey, we started to get frustrated. It's a little bit new for us, a new team. We don't like how we're playing," end quote. Do we believe that Malkin said something that was quoted he didn't really mean?
Out of the mouths of babes or out of the mouths of Russians. You say what you try to say in the most simple terms possible. When he says mad at each other, you can call it frustration if that makes you feel better. It's the same thing. They're frustrated or they're mad with how they're playing, with each other for how they're playing. And that's a good thing. I'm glad somebody said it. Why yesterday did we spend 24 hours trying to parse and massage a message that was 100% true? Oh, well, it was lost in the translation. Oh, he doesn't have the words, the vocabulary to spit it out in a more politically correct fashion. We don't want it politically correct. We want the truth. And that's probably the truth. They're probably very frustrated with each other. They're probably very mad at each other. Good. Someone's saying it. Why are we trying to throw water on it? Because that's what the Penguins want, so the message is controlled more?
Isn't that a danger, though, if you have, what was the old Mets, the 22 guys,
the
22 Cavs? Who was the Cavs?
The Red Sox.
Oh, the Red Sox?
It's
okay.
Like the 78 Red Sox.
I mean, when you have closed-door meetings without coaches either,
yeah,
that's what they're for. They're to vent. You sit there and you yell, "You were loafing on the power play. I've given you 3 passes in the last week. You fumbled them all away. You're more worried about that girl you met in Vancouver on the road trip." I mean, that's the kind of stuff that goes on in those meetings. And that's why I think they're good. The frustration gets out. The coaches.
They get James Neobeck?
You know what I mean? That's what happens in those. That's why they don't tell you what happens in them. That's why coaches don't go in there. And that's usually why you see a spurt. I think tonight's game, I think, is huge in terms of Mike Johnston's future, because if they come out completely flat and look lifeless again, that's more a reflection, I think, on him than it is on them right now.
Well, it seems like a lot of things at work here. The league scoring is so low. The Penguins are winning with defense.
There were 5 games last night, and there were 25 goals scored total in the 5 games.
The Penguins
that's
complaining
good.
About
yeah,
low,
roughly 3-2 average.
The Penguins complaining about low goal scoring totals is akin to them complaining about headshots when they had Matt Cook. They are leading the way in having the goal total driven down.
Here is James Myrtle from the Toronto Sun. This is currently the 6th lowest scoring NHL season in the last 60 years. 6 decades. And the other 5 were in the dead puck era, which was close to this, as Myrtle says.
What do they use as the dead puck era?
That's a good question. I should have.
What are they calling the dead puck era? Like the Devil's neutral zone trap era?
Is that? I guess. Maybe. That's a good point. Actually, I would have thought it would have been like older than that, but you're probably right. Because the scoring in the 70s was prolific, wasn't it? 1992, some people are saying mid-90s, I guess.
Okay.
Look at this.
Yeah, the Devil's neutral zone trap era.
Okay, so there you go. When the Florida Panthers were in the Stanley Cup finals. So, obviously, that's a concern. But, you know, for the Penguins, they are doing it to themselves. There's a bunch of stories about how to get scoring up in the league, but in terms of this year, the Penguins are 29th in scoring. So they're, 27th in scoring in goals per game, 2.06. And Andrew Berkshire wrote a piece for Sportsnet where he went through what they're doing, and Fleury's rolling it, and he's basically saying you can tell by the statistics that they're keeping a lot of shots to the outside. They're allowing a lot of shots. They're not a great possession team, but Fleury's numbers are in part due to, as what we've seen with our eyeball test, right? Forwards coming back into the play, Crosby and Malkin having to play a full 200-foot game, and Mike Johnston trying to win with defense. So this is leading to them not scoring, which is leading to frustration, which is leading to Malkin saying we're mad at each other. It's all in the same kettle, isn't it? Or is this possibly just the country club creeping up here where guys don't like each other and people don't want to play with Sid? I mean, are they separate issues?
I think they're frustrated about everything. Everything. And the league scoring issue should be secondary because they're part of it. Now, if they're frustrated, when Malkin says we're mad at each other, maybe each other also includes the coaches for making them play that way.
Yeah. Now, will anybody ever say that? Probably not.
No, because it doesn't look as good. And even Malkin with his limited English that we want to use as an excuse here is apparently smart enough to do that because he's not bringing the coaches into it. It rings and resonates positively with the public when players call each other out. But when you call out the coaching staff, that looks negative because it looks like you're trying to usurp authority.
Right.
And you're trying to undercut the legs of
you
somebody
like
supposed to be in charge.
People like Gino for saying that Saturday.
Well, that's
right?
What pisses me off about the reaction from all the Penguins yesterday, and I'm sure a lot of that came from the PR staff.
Mm.
You know, I'm sure a lot of these articles that were written and you know, the interviews that were granted and maybe given a wide berth yesterday were to clarify this message, to never make it look like there's discord within the locker room.
Right.
But I didn't hear, nary was there a complaint from a Penguin fan that I came across of Gino saying what he did. I think people, to your point, Ken, were happy that somebody was saying it out loud.
I think a lot of fans were, for sure.
Yes, exactly.
Although
now maybe
it's
they
a
were upset.
Scary.
Maybe they're upset that it came from Gino, who's talking about how mad everybody is. I hope each other included himself for taking all these stupid offensive zone hooking,
that's very true,
petulant penalties that he's been doing again.
Yeah, including the Columbus game, he took a bad tripping penalty in that game Friday, which led to their second goal and put the game out of reach. That was a game they actually were in the middle of the second period. You know, within Johnston's scheme, it's a 0-0 game. It's not very entertaining. Fascinating quote from Johnston, the coach yesterday, Guy. He said, quote, "We're in the entertainment business, but part of the entertainment is winning. That's the bottom line. That should be the bottom line for us as players, coaches, and ownership. It's about winning. We're finding ways to win games."
Well, I mean, currently that's not true. This has been an ugly stretch, but I agreed with that. You know, there was so much complaining when they won 10 out of 12. I mean, even when it was 3 in a row, 4 out of 5, and they still were ugly, you know, not scoring in the power play. All right. When it gets up to 10 out of 12, I don't care how that's more than an eighth of your season.
Yeah.
And you've won almost every single game in that stretch, including some pretty impressive road wins against some good teams, beating the Canadiens,
the best
team in the league at home, and a come from behind
win. I was entertained by that game.
I remember that.
Up until that, you know, and I think there's some truth to that. And I also think the fact that he says that he's not worried about his job is a lie.
Mm. Well, yes, what you said. Yeah, he was asked. He said, "I never worry about job security. I worry about what's coming next." It's got to be unsettling for him, though. They lose
two
games in a row.
I'm sure deep down inside, you're focused on what's coming next. Who isn't? But I think everybody worries about job security a little bit at some point in the, you know, when you're away from the daily task at hand.
Yeah. Well, Trib columnist Joe Starkey writes this today: Johnston will pay if Pens don't score, and basically saying part of the mission statement. He goes back to Ray Shiro's time here. Shiro always took in mind the goal to entertain fans,
yeah,
in addition to competing for a cup. So that was, at least under the old GM, they tried to do, to score goals, to be a Penguins team that wins with some flash and flair.
That sounds good when you have that kind of team. They had Chris Letang and Sidney Crosby and Geno. What are you going to say no to Sidney Crosby or Geno Malkin? Of course you're going to take him at the top of the draft. What are you going to say no to Chris Letang? No, you're going to see that kind of talent and you're going to put him on the ice. You know, you had Sergei Gonchar under contract when he got here. He was an offensive defenseman.
Hey, they could have had him again this year.
You know,
they do have him.
No, that's right.
In the proper place, in a suit and tie.
But of course, you build your team around what your core is. So their core was more offensive. If Ray Shiro had gotten here and their best players had been defensive and he tried to add to them, I don't think he would have added to them with the intent of mind of entertaining the fans. It would have been to try to win and build a champion.
Well, how much
the
of their
biggest
payroll...
mystery to me is even under this coaching staff and even with post-concussion Crosby, with upper 20s Malkin, the first half of last year was the Penguins the way we think of the Penguins. A power play that at this time last year, I want to say, was clicking at 35, 37% in mid-November.
Yeah.
You know, Crosby on fire, 2 goals in the first game. I think he had 8 goals after 7 games last year, something like that. So this isn't like, there's not even, you can't even say this all started when Johnston became their coach. This all started around, what the hell happened here? I mean, the fact that, okay, league scoring is down. It is tougher to score than it was a few years ago. But you still have Patrick Kane and people like that that are scoring at tremendous numbers. Why can't this team do that when I think we would all agree, maybe they're not as good defensively top to bottom as they were a year ago, but I think the 12 forwards they throw out there on every night is far better than what they had most of last year.
And their payroll is bulkily to the forwards, but I think that's actually the issue here, Guy. You had this coach come in and say, we're weak on defense, therefore I'm going to compensate for that by making sure we play defense. He didn't look at it as, we're great on offense, I'm going to accentuate that by playing an offensive game. He's like, I don't want to say he's living in his fears, but that's the way he's approached it, right?
But again, I'll go back
maybe
to
maybe he's right. Maybe that's the way to play.
I understand that, but I think he's thinking the same way I was thinking at the beginning of the season, which was you can play that way, and if that limits your ability, if that limits the amount of chances that you have to score, you still should be okay because you allegedly have elite scorers who can make the most out of a little because they're elite, talented scoring players.
Yeah.
And, you know, it shouldn't take Kobe Bryant 32 shots to get to 30 points. It might take Jared Sullinger 32 shots to get to 30 points.
Yeah.
Kobe should be able to do it in fewer. You know, for the Penguins to get to 3 goals, it should take less for them to get to 3 goals with Kessel and Letang and Crosby and Malkin.
Or sure as hell, your power play shouldn't be second worst
right.
in the league.
Right.
Not that that's like the end-all be-all for me. I mean,
and how inflated, now looking back at it, how inflated was their goal total by the power play?
Early last year. It was significantly inflated by that. The Penguins' power play conversion rate is 12%. Chris Letang was asked about this yesterday, and he dismissed it as anything significant. He said, quote, we have chances. It's not like we're not generating anything. It's simple at times. We had chances. We didn't score. It's just the percentage that's thrown into the papers. Asked if the power play percentage means anything to him.
God damn that math.
Quote, no. So you feel the unit is good and close to producing.
Exactly. I started saying that in fifth grade, Tim.
I shouldn't tease Chris. I'm with him on this one.
So Sid is not worried about 12%. No big deal.
Well, that's
an illusion.
To some extent, I think he's right, but that also is another. I think of things like Crosby putting the puck on the tape of Kessel's stick in front of the net, and he actually hit the side of the net from 10 feet. I think of Sid's all-alone chances that he normally would bury, and he's shooting it wide. I think, you know, it's not even, oh, they're passing too much. It's when they get opportunities and don't bury them. The elite players that they have, I mean, you know, the really good goal scorers, if they get 3 or 4 chances in a game, they score 1 or 2 goals. I mean, you don't get that many chances, even if you're an Art Ross Trophy winner, you don't get that many chances in a game. The difference between Joe Bag of Donuts and an Art Ross Trophy winner is the guy scores when he gets a chance.
Kobe hits the 3 with a guy at his face, as you say.
But then they're not doing it.
You're right. I went back to the Columbus game in my notes. Halfway through the second period, it's scoreless. Sid's coming down the left wing on a rush. He takes this slap shot. Bobrovsky got a sliver of his glove on it. But he didn't bury it. 2 minutes later, Hartnell scores. It's 1-0. Now it's all going the other way.
Sid and Dupuis break back 2-on-1 Saturday night shorthanded. Have a great opportunity. A defenseman slides on his belly in front of Sid, and he takes the shot. And Corey Snyder gets a little piece of it. It looked like it might have been going wide anyway. And it bounces away. There's no rebound for Dupuis. My thought was, 2 years ago, 12 months ago, Sid would have made one toe drag. That defenseman would have slid into the boards on his stomach, and he would have had a point-blank shot from 10 feet away. Instead, he shot over or around him, and it's I don't know. And I guess the longer it goes and the less success they have offensively, you talk about gripping the stick harder. You know, sometimes when you're in a batting slump, you're swinging harder. Until they relax a little. And you would think of a player of Malkin or Crosby or Kessel's pedigree, or even guys like, you know, we've questioned Kunitz and Dupuis because of age and injury in recent years anyway. I mean, there may be reasons for their drop off, but you would think guys like that would never have a confidence problem. But I think it's.
Yeah.
It's manifesting itself some.
He's on pace for 43 points. I mean, they're almost 20 games into the year. That's almost a quarter of the season.
Like I thought about it after I was driving away from here yesterday. 160 players with more points than him? That is unbelievable.
That's going to get the coach fired eventually, right? Sid behind the scenes is not going to stand.
Should get Sid on the third line is what it should get.
Well, that's for sure going to get Johnston out of here. Do you think this is a coaching problem, a Penguins problem, or a league problem? Would be my question. These frustrations.
It's all of the above. Do I get to say D?
Yes. In what percentage? Equal thirds?
No, it's mainly a player problem.
Really?
I stand by that stance that Crosby and Kessel and Malkin and Letang should be able to do more with fewer opportunities.
And you support then Johnston's system? I think if the more you go player problem, the less you got to go coach problem.
Well, think about this. Against the Bruins, was that 3 springs ago now? Couldn't score.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
2 springs ago, couldn't score against the Rangers. That's different coach, a lot of the same stars, different supporting cast, but a lot of the same star players. Couldn't score against the Rangers in the Marty St. Louis Mother Dying series. Couldn't score against the Rangers in the series last year. Can't score in the regular season now. What's the common denominator? Crosby, Malkin, Letang, Kunitz, Dupuis, pick whoever you want.
Neil.
Not Mike Johnston.
If they were 10-7 but averaging 4 goals a game, but also giving up an extra goal or two a game, would the fan base feel better about it?
We'd feel better about it because we'd be more used to it.
Yeah.
And it would be, okay, this 10-7 is still going to be good enough to project itself to a playoff team, and then hopefully this is the year they don't crap out in the playoffs.
Or we can
that
go
constant denial that this year in the playoffs will be different.
Or we'll go out and add defenseman X at the trade deadline to be able to fix it. It's a one-man fix, right? There's somebody you can add personnel-wise to solve the back end. As opposed to now, your scoring's down, and you've done everything you could possibly do to enhance the score.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a coaching change if this continues for the rest of this month. But I also go back to Rutherford practically predicting he would make a deal to relieve some salary cap space and maybe bolster the defense in the early part of the season. I'm still waiting for that to happen. Is that going to happen before? Would there be one last, let's add a piece to the puzzle, maybe get a good defensive defenseman in here, get rid of somebody you don't like.
And if
like,
we do, we can loosen up the reins on the forwards
and
a little
see
bit.
What happens. Yeah. Would they at least give him that, you know, and how much of it is too? And finances come into play a little bit here. I mean, they're paying penalties on development rights fees, and they want to pay a year and a half coach for almost 2 full years. It's not coaching them anymore. They finally get rid of having to pay Shiro and Bylsma this year.
Plus, U.S. Steel pulled out from the
That's what I mean.
North
there
the
are
other
a lot of issues.
Plus, the Blue Line Grill's changing its name, for God's sake.
Is it? The what?
Yeah, it is.
Something southern. Some southern kitchen.
Yeah. Oh, is it changing ownership then,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I don't know if Borky's pulling out on this already or what, but it's no longer. When's that going to happen?
I don't know.
It's like Jeb's Southern
it's
Kitchen.
It's all going to hell.
Great. Jeb's Southern Kitchen in a northern city across from a hockey rink. Blue Line Grill's a great name.
It's whatever. It's going to be stuff that Ken can eat, except it's going to be fried and lard, and then you can't eat it anymore.
Well,
you need grits, Ken.
What are grits?
The Pats team needs some grit, so maybe they'll serve it.
Then. How about that? Grit. Grits apostrophe.
Is it a cereal? It's like a ground. I can't stand it. It has no taste to me.
I don't like grits.
I don't like it, yeah.
It's like, I'm going to describe it as oatmeal. What is it? You have relatives down south, Josh.
He lived in Arkansas.
No. You have an aunt that lives down in Atlanta or something?
This is very watershed for me because I'm just thinking of the scene from My Cousin Vinny in my head when he's trying to figure out what grits are because Joe Pesci
is boiling ground maize is what it is.
Yeah, it is. Corn? So it is cereal. Yeah.
Boiling ground maize.
It just doesn't have any flavor. It needs hot sauce or something.
It can't be good for you.
It's bad. I hate grits.
Just go to Duffy's. You'll find some healthy stuff there. They're your South Hills headquarter for pop,
alcohol
snap,
keeps your
vapes,
arteries clear.
Beer, home brewing supplies, and all your party and tailgating needs for the week's game. Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills, online at duffysbeer.com.
Yet I like polenta. Why do I like polenta and I don't like grits?
That's a good call. I don't mind polenta. We'll get the mail going here in just a second.
What's polenta?
It's also boiling cornmeal.
It's kind of like cornbread, or more it feels like.
It's like a solid porridge.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay, in addition to this, the league issues, whether you think it's player, coach, or more league, it seemed like last night there were four or five major stories on the scoring issues in the NHL that came out.
Well, you know what's interesting, guys? I don't know if you agree with this, but when there were, 10 years ago, there were teams like the Devils and the Red Wings at the time with a left-wing lock, teams that played those kinds of systems that were able to shut. Most of the time it was teams without a lot of offensive talent, and it was their way to compete. League-wide now, I don't think it's so. I think the problems now are more league-wide, not individually team-oriented, for the things that we've talked about. Player size, equipment size, willingness to block shots because of equipment, things like that. I don't think this is all a system thing where it was before.
Well, a lot of these articles, and I'm not saying this like to pat myself on the back, oh, I did it first, but I mean, it underscores the discussion we just had, how striking it is to people in Pittsburgh. But I mean, a lot of these stories that were written last night are the same things that I did for Inside Pittsburgh Sports a couple of weeks ago to indicate how scoring is down league-wide and cited all the examples that I did. And I think other markets in hockey are slowly starting to realize, nationally starting to realize how much of an issue scoring is, whereas for here in Pittsburgh, it's so stark to look at.
Right, yeah. We see it every day.
As opposed to what we're used to.
True. These are ways to fix scoring. Okay, Craig Button, who's a guest on this show, had a list of five ways to fix scoring. Two of them, and I've seen these echoed elsewhere regarding, are just involving the power play itself. One is that penalties should be served in their entirety, as they used to be in the league. So if you score a goal on a 5-on-4, you stay on the 5-on-4 for the full 2 minutes. Okay.
How does that help the Penguins based on what we just talked about?
I don't know. Somebody said this is kind of like putting a Band-Aid on the problem, and I agree. You can fix the power, you can boost power play scoring, but that doesn't solve the 5-on-5 problem that you have in the game, right?
Correct.
I mean, you would increase scoring. It might work.
But to Joe Hockey Fan, the puck went in the net, the horn went off, the song played on the Jumbotron speakers, everybody's happy.
Right. And you may get teams more reluctant to take penalties if they know they're going to have to serve the full 2 minutes and it could be a game changer. So that might change the way the game is called and played. I'll give you that. The other one is to ban icing on the power plays by the shorthanded team. So you can't just clear it. You got to actually work it out of your zone. And in some cases, the team that's shorthanded take more chances once they
get to the
red line. I
don't like that one because everybody will still do it.
Just ice the puck?
Yes.
Yeah, but then you're tired and you have to stay on the ice and it will, by theory, lead to more goals.
But it slows the game down. It gums the game down.
Right. Okay. Three others are eliminate the tag up offsides rule, which is kind of a minor thing to me. You know, like where some player has to retreat and come back into the offensive zone. Anyway, he's saying it would allow more neutral zone turnovers. Scotty Bowman had this.
Yeah, but it slows down the game with faceoffs, though.
Yeah.
And that's the reason they went to that to begin with, to keep the game moving. Because,
right.
Those two ideas have turned this into football and skates here. It's like a face-off, like a snap every other play.
Apparently, Scotty Bowman has had this idea for a while, over 10 years, to add another line on the ice, which is, if there's not enough lines to confuse, you know, simple hockey fans enough, this would be in the defensive zone across the top of the face-off circles. So the team that would have to gain that line before the red line is eliminated for an offside pass. So it would be basically, that's what I'm saying, it's so confusing. Teams would have to move past that line before passing it up ice.
For a stretch pass.
For a stretch pass, which he thinks would create more opportunities for turnovers in the D zone. You know what I mean? Because then you'd have to gain that line, and so instead of just whipping it around the boards or... Anyway, it's so confusing, I don't even think it's palatable.
Yeah, but it would take away the opportunities of hitting someone with it the other way.
Right.
No, you'd have to gain the second line at the top of the circles.
Yes.
to allow yourself to receive a stretch pass?
Yeah, that, otherwise the two-line pass would be in effect and you couldn't spring somebody. Again.
So wait, one person wants to add another line while another group of people wants to get rid of the red line. Or sorry, bring the red line back, rather.
So some people do, yep. The other one is one we've talked about, to curb shot blocking, two-minute minor if you a player goes down on one leg or leaves his feet to block a shot, which would be a judgment call from the officials. And finally, one other ESPN story, which I thought was pretty interesting, and the headline is, calling more penalties won't fix the NHL scoring issue. And this guy basically goes back to what everybody deemed is right after the lockout, remember when scoring was up and they were cracking down on obstruction. And he says, basically all that did was increase power plays by a massive amount. And yes, you increased scoring, but it didn't really move, it didn't change anything. It was just, you called more penalties, it was a power play fest on both sides.
Well, what else are you looking to change?
Well, he gets into, he goes back and looks how ridiculous it was in the old days.
I think for fan appeal, that's massively overrated.
What is?
The 5-on-5 scoring versus power play scoring.
Oh.
I think most people in the arena want to see the puck go in the net and have the horn go off and have the song play.
Even if there's not a flow, there's not an end.
I've always thought since I first was a little kid watching hockey that playing with an uneven amount of players is one of the neat things in sports that you don't see anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
I guess in soccer it can happen, you know, late in games, but
well, this guy's thesis is the goalies are too big and too good. The defensive systems are too well implemented. Shot blocking is too common. Maybe the nets are even too small. But the league's problems run much deeper than simply calling the rule book. And maybe he's right.
Well, calling the rule book, the thing where I think his mistake is, calling the rule book may increase penalties initially, but I think eventually what it does is it causes players to take less penalties.
Yeah.
All right, this is going to be called regularly. I can't do this anymore, which then creates more 5-on-5 opportunities.
Right.
You're not tugging a stick up under a guy's armpit when he's on a 2-on-1 break because you know, I mean, you're always going to take a penalty if it's going to prevent a scoring chance. Those are good penalties.
Mm-hmm.
But I think some of the lazy penalties that you do to keep a guy from blowing past you in the neutral zone, or I think you're going to think twice before you commit them.
He's saying, basically, if you look at the league, there's not much of that anymore compared to what Lemieux and others had to go through. In fact, he puts, you know, the videos of Lemieux carrying guys. I mean, you don't really see the water skiing as we used to. So,
water skiing.
You know, they've kind of enforced the rule book, and still scoring's a problem. But he's just saying that's, people say that. It's very easy to say that flippantly. All right, let's
well, I think out. Overall, too, one thing that doesn't get talked about a lot, I think the skating has evened out. I think the difference between the best skaters and the worst skaters is much smaller than it was, certainly, in the 1970s or when I mean, there were guys back then, you know, you go back and see some of the rare old footage. There are guys that aren't great. Everybody can skate today.
All the Russians are here.
All these guys start at 4 years
yep.
old. They all can turn on, you know.
Right.
So even the greatest skater doesn't have the advantage that he once did against some third or fourth liners or some of the lesser talented defensemen.
All right. Whose fault is it, league player or coach? Did you like Gino's first comment Saturday, and what do you think about him saying he didn't mean it?
It's funny.
There's no rift.
Last night off, and my wife and I went over another couple's house to watch the Monday night game, have some pizza, and the other guy's wife's a huge Penguins fan. In fact, we get together often to watch games when I'm not working or when they're on the road. And I said, what do you think of the Penguins this year? She goes, I'll be honest with you. She goes, I've turned a lot of games off in the middle. I'm so bored with them. This is a good fan, one that watches all the time, but that kind of struck accord with me that this is someone that I know that arranges her evenings and schedules and chores around being able to sit down and watch a Penguin game in its entirety, and she's not watching them.
Yeah, turn on that football game, which 10-6 last night. That'll
it's kind of frustrating because I'm watching the NHL Network while you guys are talking here, and you know they just went through their goals of the week and some of the skill that these guys have.
Oh, it's great. You know,
you watch the Bennett, Yossi, and Vanek goals 1, 2, 3, like they just played there, and your jaw drops.
How about
and then
that
they just
Saad
did a Tarasenko, yeah, and Saad. Throw Saad's in the mix too.
The backhand roof job, you know, middle picks a corner.
I'll take Bobby Farnham's roll down the back goal the way things are going now.
Yeah, you know what? And Saad's backhander that Fleury saved might have been even more impressive if it had gone in, but Fleury took it away.
All right, Sam, first up today, he says, by the way, did you guys see ESPN praising Antonio Brown for his dumbass flip? None of the people on the panel said anything bad about it. They're all tools. They should have said, this guy's an asshat. He only cares about himself.
No, it's a highlight that they can run over and over and over again.
AFC North is not up for grabs, Sam says, since he is not losing three or four more games, and the Steelers would have to win out even for that to be a consideration.
Did I talk you off the ledge of that one?
I never really believed it. I just, for show sentiment, I kind of wanted to put that out there. Well, I'm saying I'll give it a 5% chance.
A 5% chance.
I give it a 5% chance.
They're going to have to collapse.
They need to lose to Cleveland.
They're going to have to collapse, and they're going to have the run of injuries that the Steelers have had, an equivalent run of injuries.
I will say we have seen things in the league this year that I did not expect it. I mean, did you think Aaron Rodgers would look this human and the Packers to be free-falling, losing to Detroit at home?
Carolina would be one of two unbeaten teams at Thanksgiving?
You know what, though, Ken? After the injuries that they suffered in the preseason, particularly here in Pittsburgh with Nelson going down, I did not think they'd get off to the start that they did. I was very surprised that Green Bay got off to the start that it did, and it feels like it's catching up to them now.
That might be it. And the Bengals have not had major injuries, which would lead you to think they could similarly fall apart. The Killer Chihuahua.
Do you think the injuries are going to even out with the Bengals at some point here? Was it a charm season for them?
Yeah, I mean,
let's face it. I mean, for years now, the teams that survive and get to the Super Bowl aren't always who you would think was the best team over the course of 3 or 4 months. It's been the team that's the healthiest in December.
Yeah.
In January.
And that was an amazing thing about that 2005 team. You think about how banged up they were during that season and how they managed to stay afloat until they got to the NFC portion of their schedule. I mean, well, they didn't stay afloat until they were 500 until they got to the NFC portion of their schedule.
Those final four games, they beat the Bears, they beat the Lions, right?
The Vikings.
Who else? Cleveland.
Cleveland was sandwiched in there, yeah. That was the week 15 game? 16 game.
Killer says, Andy.
Three of the four were at home.
Andy Dalton is a wuss, writes the Killer. The Bengals are going nowhere. He'll choke again come playoff time. He was upset with those comments from J.J. Watt. Here's hoping somehow the Steelers meet them in the divisional playoff round. By the way, the Red Ryder BB gun reference is ironic because Dalton has a striking resemblance to Scott Farkas.
He does.
He
was a bully from Christmas Story.
The Farkas affair.
Bart asks, will the Baltimore Ravens lay down that last game against the Bengals to prevent the Steelers from winning the division if it comes down to that? Cincinnati hosting Baltimore week 17.
Will the Bengals lay down?
Will the Ravens lay down?
Oh, will the Ravens lay down to help the Bengals?
No.
They might do it to help themselves in the draft.
Yeah.
If they need a quarterback. By the way, good stuff on the Ike Taylor show this morning from Dave Tate Thomas.
Hey, John Harbaugh's, I think he's quoting Gladiator, so let's not give up on the Raiders just yet. Are you not entertained? I don't know if you saw that one on ESPN or not.
The Raiders or the Ravens?
The Ravens. Did I say the Raiders?
Yeah, I think you said, well, I don't know. What, entertained by what? They're finished of that game with Jacksonville?
I don't know. He's trying to motivate them by showing them Gladiator clips, apparently.
Oh, Harbaugh's?
Yes.
Beautiful. Sure, that'll be
show them last Gladiator clips.
The Ravens may be going for a first-round pick in the draft. I don't know. They are the Browns or who's in the? Are they in last with two
wins? Jacksonville.
Everybody has 2 wins. Cowboys have 2 wins. Lions have 2 wins.
That's not on my radar to worry about them tanking in any way to affect the Steelers.
Okay, man. Well, he says the first pick in the draft is going to be the Memphis quarterback. Anyway, this scout on John's show in the morning, Paxton Lynch. He thinks he's the best quarterback, and it won't even be a debate. He'll be the.
He just got beaten on Saturday.
He did just lose to Houston.
How about Tyler Boyd not being up for the Biletnikoff Award? He didn't make it into the top 10.
Well, it's funny you bring that up. Maybe we'll have some clips we can play later from Dave. He was critical of Boyd, too.
Oh, really?
And said he thinks he's dropped to a third round based on what he's seen from him this year, which is surprising to me to hear because I thought Boyd's had a pretty decent year. How many Biletnikoff candidates are there?
A lot of people don't think he can get deep.
That seemed to be Dave's assessment. He was a lot of short passes.
Well, Fitzgerald, when he came out, one of the few knocks in Fitzgerald was he doesn't get deep enough, and part of the reason he looks so good in contested catch situations is that he's always covered. Remember, he went in the top five anyway, but after that Miami game when I think it was Antrell Roll and Sean Taylor were all over him, people were saying, well, look, when he goes up against elite cornerbacks, he can't get himself open. But still,
turned out to be a little flawed.
Right, Kurt Warner and Carson Palmer, when he's had a real quarterback, could still get the ball to him.
But think about it, though. If you're a guy that can catch a ball, even if it is because you're not getting open, but you can catch a contested ball, don't you have a better chance of NFL success than a guy who in college is flying by people
right.
and catching it in wide open spaces, and those spaces are disappearing when you become a pro?
Yeah.
I saw McShay's draft board, and McShay's draft board had him fifth amongst wide receivers. Mm.
If he slipped enough, would it by any way make him stay another year, do you think?
That's an interesting question.
He had him behind Fuller, Treadwell, Coleman, and I can't remember who the fifth guy was, but he had Fuller fourth, Coleman third. Oh, the TCU kid, Doxson.
Doxson, yeah. D-O-C-T-S-O-N.
Yeah, he was in there, and the top guy he had was Treadwell from Ole Miss.
Well, and he mentioned James Conner, too, and he thinks he's like a fifth-round running back, but I don't know if staying... Because Connor has another year of eligibility.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So
come back.
Both those guys could stay another year?
In theory. Boy, what a team that would be.
It'd be a coup for Pitt, and Whitehead, of course, sticking around for a year. We'll see how it goes. He also mentioned that he thought of all the quarterbacks, he's intrigued by Hackenberg still. He thinks he's in the wrong system at Penn State. This is Dave Tate-Thomas again, who's an NFL scout, but thinks he probably should have transferred out of there before Franklin came in with his Vanderbilt spread, which is not really fit for him, but he thinks Sudfeld from Indiana is a good quarterback, kind of a baby Roethlisberger, and he thinks maybe the Steelers would look at him in round three.
Look, I'm not a scout. I can't watch a player and predict, but I don't – Hackenberg has some raw tools, but some of the stuff that I see, even when he has wide – forget about the system they're in. When he has plenty of protection, is standing there and has wide open receivers, he hasn't been tremendously accurate.
He has a total boom or bust projection for him, right? I mean, he could go and get to the play for Bill O'Brien or something, and he gets him back on the right track. Who knows?
Transfer to Maryland, play for Bill O'Brien there next year.
So if the Ravens tank all the way to the first pick, as that emailer was suggesting, mm-hmm. so they could get the Memphis quarterback. That means that they would have Joe Flacco. They probably wouldn't take $25 million in dead cap money to let him go, but 15 in 2017?
Trade Flacco somewhere?
But like, if they were to let go of Flacco, there would be $15.3 million in dead cap space for 2017 if they drafted this kid with the number one overall pick and planned to start him in 2017.
Yeah, I guess Baltimore wouldn't draft a quarterback, huh? Jeff says the Steelers are really four games back, guys, because they would lose that second tiebreaker division record. The next one is conference record, etc.
Yeah.
He doesn't see them catching the Tiger, as his headline is. Very catchy there, like that. Mike S. says, everybody loves the Patriots at ESPN. I think Tim's going to dispute you on this, Mike. But
not
anyway.
According to Patriots fans. ESPN is working against them.
Yeah. But anyway, Mike S. says they drooled all over them. Now they're saying it's going to be extremely hard for them to succeed because of their injuries.
There is some overcompensation going on at ESPN for the way they covered Deflategate.
That's what I was going to say, yeah.
Mike says the Patriots' injuries are great. They should have lost last week. If the refs can figure out what a catch is, ESPN spent more time talking about their injuries rather than the Steelers, who are more injured, and the best running back in the NFL here being out for a year.
So what that email amounts to is ESPN hates the Steelers. It's not even that ESPN likes the Patriots. It's ESPN doesn't love the Steelers
Everybody
enough.
Thinks ESPN hates
Everybody
their
thinks
team.
Every national outlet is working against their local team. It's the most tired, hackneyed
I think
fan
the opposite.
Thing
I
ever.
Think in general the national media kisses the Steelers' ass.
Yes, they do.
All over
Just
them.
Drool all over them. The Rooneys, the Immaculate Reception, the towel, the fan base, the inclines going up and down the mountain. They love it all. Collinsworth barfs all over himself.
Collinsworth
loves
Bengal.
The Steelers. Just listen to a game like you've never listened to a game with a jaundice against Collinsworth before, a bias against him.
I like him, but I'm not sure he likes the Steelers that much. Really,
he pukes all over the Steelers. He overcompensates when he does a Steeler game because people like you, he knows, assume
he
that everything.
Them.
Yeah, everything he says is negative.
He's gotten better. He used to be. Very slanted, I felt. I think he has overcompensated and fooled you over the last 6 years.
Oh, I think in his heart he probably does hate the Steelers, but he played for Cincinnati. But it's how you present it on TV, though. What you really feel is irrelevant. How you present it is, and he usually presents it like, he would lay black and gold rose petals down at their feet as they walked into the stadium if he had the opportunity.
He should never call a Steelers game or any AFC North teams.
I know you're thinking there.
SoCal Lou. Why is Jacoby Jones still on the team?
Tall Dree.
He's a tall Dree.
Tall Dree of water.
He's Tall Dree Archer.
There you go, Lou. Well, they cut Small Dree, so maybe another week and they'll cut Tall Dree. Brandon emails.
Sources on the ground tell me that Jacoby Jones is acutely aware how poorly he has played so far.
Oh, really? Well, how could he not be?
In a quite the depressive funk.
Well, he was good. I mean, he was legitimately good. When you're as good as he is, you damn well know what bad is. I mean, he can't be fooling himself. Maybe he'll just retire. I mean, is he like Peyton Manning? Or has he just realized he's done?
Again, one of the buried storylines of that Raiders game against the Steelers was how Sebastian Janikowski was screwing with the Steelers kick return unit because they knew Jacoby Jones stunk because they'd seen him in San Diego, and they knew the Steelers return game stunk, so they just kept kicking it short.
Sebastian, they felt he was Pedro Alvarez, and they were just hitting it right to him?
Sebastian Janikowski could have kicked it into CCAC's parking lot if he wanted to every single time, and he kept kicking it to the 5 because they knew if they kicked it to the 3 or the 5, then they could get him at the 15, and they'd save themselves 5 yards.
Brandon says, I was holding my Jag off of the week vote for tomorrow, guys, for Tomlin and that ridiculous endorsement of Antonio Brown's stupid end zone flip, but... Now I may vote for Laird for not seeing both Bad Santa and Mighty Ducks. Thank you.
My name is Josh Taylor, and I endorse that email.
Scott W. You can either believe, guys, in regards to the Penguins, that 71, 87, 72, 14, 58, 81, 57 are all in a career-worst points-per-game slump at the same time, or you can believe the system is not a fit. You tell me which the odds favor. And yes, this team has had scoring issues before, but...
I think they're both true.
Never have all these players been having point-per-game averages like this.
I think they're both true. I think they are in group slumps, and I think the system is holding them back. Why can't they both be true?
Well, they could all be true if one or two guys slumps, it slumps the rest of the line with them, right?
Okay, but the...
So you're right, actually.
The suggestion that it's more about the system and not about the players... that they're not all in group slumps, doesn't explain away how they're missing the net or shooting right into the goalie or overpassing when they do have chances in the offensive zone. Like, when they do get chances, they're not burying chances.
Right.
What does that have to do with the system? The system, you can argue, doesn't allow them to create enough chances. Okay, heard, understood. Mm-hmm. But when they have created chances, they haven't buried them.
Yeah, where do they rank in terms of chances?
Their so what does that have to do?
Not real good. Offensive zone, they're not getting... good chances, right? I mean, isn't that the advanced metrics
this 200-foot thing that everybody wants to complain about, mm-hmm. I'll listen to, I'll buy it, I understand. But when they have skated to the point where they get open, where they have gotten the 2-on-1 or the 3-on-2 or whatever the case may be,
right.
Or the power play, they're not burying chances. That is independent from the system.
Well, what's their shooting percentage? What's like a reasonable shooting percentage, and are they... below average in terms of...
Well, when I did the numbers before, they were below, but that was like 3 weeks ago now, so yep. I can look that up.
It's a tough thing to measure.
You know, if chemistry is bad, they have like 11 new players this year that weren't here last year. I mean, they've changed so much of their... Now, the core guys are still there, and they're core guys that you want still there. You would think you want still there. I don't think this has been a particularly easy team to come to and play for. I don't think they're overly welcoming of new players from the outside. I think there were so many of them this past year. There's been no choice. There's so many new guys. But, you know, we talked that the coaching staff did not use Jerome McGinley the right way. I don't think Jerome McGinley was welcomed into here the way that he could have been.
Well, McGinley, I agree with you. And Hossa left. He didn't want to stay. I always wondered about that. But I haven't heard any concrete reports of that, right, of guys like Justin Morneau, like, suggesting it was the worst room I'd ever been in, or,
Sutter didn't seem like he really wanted to leave, and Neil didn't want to go. I mean, rumor is that Neil said, please keep me, you know, please don't trade me, wondering.
But that was a different system with Bilesma, who was an offensive coach, for whatever you want to say about him. All right, lots to digest here. More emails to come.
But I haven't heard even on an aside or an off the record or in a conversation you pick up on, I haven't heard one player complain about Johnson or the coaching staff outwardly, though, have you? Not that they are generally, but usually hear some rumbling somewhere, even if it's from one of our beat guys who have a better relation, one daily relationship with these guys. I haven't heard any of that.
5-on-5 shooting percentage. The Penguins are 24th. Okay. 6.1.
Well, there you go. That's not good. It's below the line.
Where's Mike Bullard when you need him?